Penguin Random House Audio presents Mistress of the Ritz by Melanie Benjamin. Read for you by Barbara Rosenblatt. To Ben, who had to wait for this one. Lily. Blanche is dead. Sometimes death is a mercy. And I believe this is true for her, because she was once so vibrant and spirited, and that's how I'll remember her. I have so many memories of Blanche. Blanche singing a sailor sea chanty with a glass of champagne balanced on the back of her hand. Blanche showing a streetwalker how to dance the Charleston. Blanche being gently compassionate to someone who didn't deserve it. Blanche stubbornly turning her back and stomping her foot like a child. Blanche, blazing with courage, defying, foolishly, those she should not. But the memory of Blanche that remains the most vivid is the memory of seeing her for the first time in the setting that suited her best. At the Ritz. Her beloved Ritz. Blanche wasn't there the day the Nazis first arrived in 1940. She was still making her way back home from the south of France. But she told me how it happened that day. How at first, the Ritz employees and guests only heard them. The tanks and jeeps roaring into the vast square, positioning themselves around the tall obelisk as Napoleon himself stared down in horror from his lofty perch. Then the metal heels of boots ringing out on the cobblestones and pavement, faint at first, but increasing in volume as the Germans came close, closer, closest. They wrung their hands, they looked at one another, and some of them bolted for the service entrance downstairs. But they didn't get far. Madame Ritz herself, small, gallant, dressed in her best black dress, still in the old Edwardian style, waited inside the entrance to her home that was the grandest hotel in all of Paris. Her bejeweled hands trembled as she clasped them in front of her. More than once she glanced up at the enormous portrait of her late husband, as if his painted likeness could tell her what to do. Some of these employees had been with her, with him, in the beginning, in 1898. They remembered the first time these same doors flew open. The glittering gay guests venturing into the richly appointed hall. No lobby for Monsieur Ritz's new hotel. He did not wish for mere citizens to darken its gilded portals, eyes shining with awe. Princes and duchesses and the wealthiest of the wealthy. Marcel Proust, Sarah Bernhardt. Then, as musicians played, as chandeliers gleamed, as the kitchen sent up trays and trays of Auguste Escoffier's finest creations, meringues of vanilla cream, decorated with sugared petals of lavender and violet. Tourne d'os Rossini, rich pâtés, even peach Melba in honor of Dame Nellie Melba, who had agreed to serenade the guests later. They gave one last touch to their new uniforms and smiled, eager to do their jobs. To fetch, lift, provide, polish, dust, mop, chop, fold, soothe, fix. To pamper, to cosset. They were thrilled to be part of this, the opening of a grand new hotel, the only one in the world with bathrooms en suite. Telephones in every room, completely wired with the new electricity instead of gaslight. the Hotel Ritz on the Place Vendôme. This day, they did not smile. Some wept openly as the Germans stormed through the front doors, their dusty black boots sullying the carpets, their guns slung across their shoulders or holstered. They did not remove their caps, those imperious caps with the eagle insignia. Their uniforms, grey-green, the color of haricot vert, were ugly and offensive against the brilliant gold and marble and crystal of the hallway, the ornate tapestries on the walls, the regal blue of the carpeted grand staircase, the blood-red band on their arms, the menacing black spider of the swastika, made everyone shiver. The Germans were here, just as everyone was told they would be after the French army crumbled like one of Monsieur Escoffier's fine flaky pastries, after the Maginot Line proved to be a child's illusion, after the British allies abandoned France, fleeing across the Channel at Dunkirk. The Germans were here, in France, in Paris, at the Hotel Ritz on the Place Vendôme. Chapter 1. Blanche, June 1940. Her shoes. It's her shoes that worry her, if that can be believed. Of all the things this woman should be concerned about on this horrific day, it's her shoes. But in her defense, given who she is and where she is headed, her shoes are a problem. They're filthy, caked with dried mud, the heels worn down, and all she can think about as her husband helps her off the train is how Coco Chanel, that bitch, will react when she sees her. How they'll all react when she shows up at the Ritz with filthy, worn-down shoes, her ripped stockings practically disintegrating on her shapely calves. While she can't do anything about her stockings, even Blanche Ozelot would never dream of changing her stockings in public. She is desperate to find a bench so that she can rummage through her suitcases and find another pair of shoes. But before she can speak this wish, she and her husband are swept up in the wave of bewildered. Well, what the hell are they now? French? German? Refugees? Who are flooding out of the Gare du Nord, eager, terrified, to see what has become of Paris in their absence. Blanche and her husband are part of the great unwashed. Dirt and cinders have coagulated in pockets of perspiration beneath their chins, behind their ears, their knees, in the crevices of their elbows. Greasy faces streaked with soot. They haven't changed clothes in days. Claude packed away his captain's uniform before they left his garrison. "To be worn again," he assured Blanche. Or more likely, she suspected, himself. "When we fight back, as we most certainly will." But no one knows when, or if, that time will come, now that the Germans have taken France. Outside, the pair finally push their way out of the crowd so that they can catch their breath, try to corral all the luggage that is slipping out of their hands. When they packed 9 months ago, they had no idea how long they'd be away. Automatically, they look for a taxi in the usual line outside the station entrance. But there are none. There are no cars at all. Only one lone cart hitched to the saddest horse Blanche has ever seen. Claude glances at the horse, takes in its heavy breathing, the foam dribbling from its mouth, ribs so defined it's as if the flesh has been carved, and shakes his head. "That animal will never see another morning." "You!" Blanche marches over to the man sitting on the cart, a man with small eyes and a gap-toothed smile.
"Yes, madame. 10 francs. 10, and I take you anywhere in Paris. I have the only horse and cart within 20 kilometers. You unharness that horse right now, you...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?